We will call the first case of the two we are hearing this morning, number 25-10797, Asus Capital Management LP versus Dondero. Ms. Adler. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
Good morning. May it please the court. This court should reverse the judgment of the district court because Dondero and Highland were not in privity at the time of the consent judgments. And subject to the panel's questions, I'd like to cover three main topics today. Okay. The first is that when a prior case ends in a consent judgment, the proper time for determining privity is at the time of the consent judgment. The second is that alter ego does not automatically and always result in privity. And the third, on the facts of this case, there was no privity between Dondero and Highland. So starting with timing, the district court in its judgment really made two errors. And the first and more obvious one is that it didn't conduct the surrounding factual analysis that's called for under this court's precedent. And I want to talk about that when I get to alter ego. But the second error was that it didn't consider the time at which it should decide privity. And the reason that I want to start with timing is that even if this court ultimately agrees with Dondero that the structure of the law on privity has changed post-Mesa, it would still need to reverse the judgment of the district court because it looked at privity at the wrong moment in time. So just a little framing on the consent judgment versus a adjudication of liability.
All right, when did he cease to be in privity with Highland?
I think that that would probably begin around the time that he was ousted from the company. I think that there were things that happened that made it more and more obvious over time. But
why didn't you sue him then?
I wish that I had a great answer for that question, Judge. I don't know.
Well, I wish you did too, because at some point you allege that he's alter ego. You allege that he is Highland Capital. You allege that they're one and the same. You seek liability against both of them for the conduct of one or the other. But then you say, well, but at the time we entered this consent judgment, you know, he wasn't in privity anymore. Well, that meant you either should have reserved the claims against Dondero and stated that to somebody, contrary to your allegations, or you should have sued him.
Well, I agree with Your Honor. I wish that I was in the position, I wish that I wasn't here today and that our prior counsel had sued him at the time. But I do think that legally, under the framework, they still were not in privity such that res judicata should have been applied in this case. So if the case had ended in an adjudication of liability, right, the jury or the judge at that point would have been considering the actions in the past when it's adjudging liability and the relationships that were present in the past that gave rise to liability. Because this ended in a settlement and a consent judgment, when that happened, Highland was only speaking for itself.
But a consent judgment is a judgment on the merits.
It is a judgment on the merits, I agree, but it's not an adjudication of liability. And I think that that is the important distinction here. And when it was entered, Highland was only able to speak for itself. At the time of that consent judgment, Dondero had actually objected to the settlement, right? And they were embroiled in litigation. And so they didn't have a relationship at all. Highland was only speaking for itself at that time. And I think this case is the perfect example of why we should consider privity at different points in time, because sometimes, and perhaps particularly in the bankruptcy context, you might have a situation where a bad actor ultimately gets ousted. The company wants to settle claims, but the plaintiffs would never be incentivized from settling because they would be subject to res judicata. The other thing that
all they'd have to do is carve out any claims against the bad actor.
Yes, they could carve out the claims against the bad actor, I agree. But I still think that under the law in this case, they didn't have to because of how the relationship had deteriorated at the time.
What's your authority? What's the case law showing this sort of temporal application of privity? Privity to begin, but not privity at the end, or vice versa?
I don't think there is a case, Your Honor. And I think that's one of the reasons that we're here today, is that this is a question that hasn't been answered or maybe that hasn't even been considered. But
where's your case where a party pled alter ego status and that sort of thing, all the allegations you have, but the court was still required to go through this holistic analysis you're saying the court had to do?
I don't have a case that says that, Your Honor. What I have is that I think logically, because of this unique factual scenario that's present in this case, it makes sense not to invoke res judicata, because at the time that Highland entered the settlement that gave rise to the judgment that Dondero is seeking to use against ACES, he did not have a relationship with Highland. It's almost like rewarding a bad actor that he's able to take advantage of this after he's plundered a company and then the company is trying to settle after the fact. One other thing that I wanted to clarify on this, because I think it might be unclear from the briefing, is that ACES is not alleging that if a case ends in a consent judgment, there can't be res judicata. I think that was Dondero's response, and he cited cases like Lubrizol. That's not our position. Our position is only that you would need to look at the timing differently. You have to make that decision at the time of the consent judgment. And I think probably in a lot of cases, the outcome is the same at both times. This is just one of those cases where it's not.
The position is that the timing of, say that last part again, so there's a different rule for consent judgments and adversarial judgments with respect to res judicata?
I would say that the application of res judicata is the same. It would just be the time at which the judge looks at the relationship. So if it ended in an adjudication of liability, you would look at the relationship at the time that the allegations giving rise to liability happened. And if it ended in a consent judgment, you would look at the relationship at the time of the consent judgment.
And you have no citation for that?
I don't have a case that says that because I don't think it's an issue that's been considered. We did cite in our brief the second restatement of judgments at Section 51. Mm-hmm. And that restatement says that for cases of vicarious liability, if the first judgment ended in a consent judgment, then you should not apply res judicata. And we're actually suggesting a rule that is more limited than that, not saying that you should not do it, but just saying you should consider the timing.
Okay. All right. You had two other points.
Yes.
Beyond that.
Yes, Your Honor. So moving on to the alter ego and the categories of privy. So this court held in Meza that there are three narrowly defined categories where privity exists. Alter ego, that relationship, is not one of those categories. Now, ACES concedes that probably much of the time, alter ego would satisfy one of those categories. It would satisfy the adequate representation prong under Meza, but ultimately it's not its own standalone category, and that's where Dondero and ACES are squabbling. And that's ultimately what the district court said. It said there's an alter ego relationship, timing issue, so there's privity, right? It did not conduct the fact-based analysis of the surrounding circumstances. And in this court's cases post-Meza, the court reiterates the Meza categories, but then goes on to say that privity, you know, is a fact-based inquiry. We need to look at surrounding circumstances. The district court in this case did not do that, and that was error. If it had done that, we believe it would have seen some of the things that we've talked about and concluded that they did not have this alter ego relationship at the relevant time.
Does that argument depend on us accepting your first argument about timing?
Well, I think that regardless of accepting the argument about timing, the district court just did not do this factual analysis.
If we disagree with you on the timing point, you still think this is a path to reversal? Is that what I'm asking?
I do, because I think the district court had to do it and that it failed to do so.
Despite your conclusive allegations.
I do. I think that the court was required to undertake.
I mean, even despite your judicial admissions?
Your Honor, the judicial admission issue, which I know Dondero raised about present tense allegations in the Dondero adversary, right? That was carried over from the complaint in the Highland adversary. That was the background section. It was the introduction of
the complaint. So they just don't mean anything because they were copied and pasted.
No, that's not what I mean, Your Honor.
I hope not.
What I mean is that I think that if you read the complaint as a whole, some of the more substantive allegations are in the past tense. And I think that what the drafter was trying to achieve was saying, in the past, he is this. Like, looking at the past, they're speaking in the present tense. And I know that sounds, it's coming out not the way I would like for it to be super clean, but I think our brief makes this point probably better than I'm
Well, it's just difficult for me to understand why, if you've stipulated a fact according, I mean, you haven't stipulated, you've alleged something. that the district court nonetheless has to go around your allegation, disregard your allegation, and test your allegation with the factual circumstances you say are required to determine privity. I mean, you're alleging alter ego, which means there's effectively one entity, not two.
I guess that.
And yet you're saying, well, no, the district court needs to go back, despite what we've alleged, and determine whether we're actually right about that or not.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt
you.
No,
that's okay.
I guess what I'm saying is that I disagree with the foundation that we make, even though the present tense is used, that those allegations were meant as a present tense allegation of alter ego, and that they were tied up with the past tense allegations later in our complaint, and it was supposed to be viewed from the point of, imagine that we're in the present time, but that was years ago. Like, imagine that we are years ago. These are my allegations. And so I do think that the district court had to take that step of looking at the surrounding circumstances. Now, Don Darrow's objection to this is that he's sort of created a new version of the test for privity, and I want to break it down because I think it's a little bit confusing. So first, he says that we're not limited to the categories in MESA anymore. He cites cases like Russell, which talk about doing this broad factual analysis, and he uses that as support for the reason that the district court didn't make an error. But even if you stop right there, that's a problem, because the cases that he's relying on to say we have gone beyond MESA are cases that say you need to look at all the background facts, which is exactly what the district court didn't do. They just decided on the basis of a relationship. And next, Don Darrow goes on to say that the new test is just whether two parties are sufficiently related to merit the application of claim preclusion. I don't think that that can be the test, because his test is essentially the outcome, right? ASIS is not disputing that privity is just a label or that it means parties are sufficiently related. ASIS is disputing that that can't be the test, because that's the same thing as saying they're in privity. It doesn't tell you when parties are sufficiently related. That framework is actually in MESA. And since MESA, the court has continued to reiterate the categories. And I think that one of the best cases that demonstrates that is actually the Armadillo Hotel case that we cited in our brief. On page 631 of that opinion, this court started by repeating the holdings from MESA again, and that we have these three limited circumstances. And then it went on to say, quote, that list demonstrates that we look to whether, unquote, a relationship is sufficiently close for claim preclusion. And so I think that the reasoning in that case demonstrates that there's not a new test after MESA. We're just saying this test actually demonstrates that we need to look at things are sufficiently close. And so that's why, we would argue that alter ego does not ipso facto create privity. And then my last section here is just that if the court had looked at the circumstances of the relationship at the time of the consent judgment and the surrounding facts, it would have seen that Don Darrow had already lost control of Highland. He had been ousted from the company. He'd been enjoined from communicating with people from Highland. His plans for reorganization in the Highland bankruptcy had been rejected, that they were suing each other, and that he had objected to the settlement agreement itself, demonstrating that their interests at that point in time were actually very much adverse to each other. But if the panel doesn't have other questions, I'll...
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
You have time for rebuttal. Mr. Lang.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court. I think Judge Wilson had it right. This is not a case about privity due to the allegations. It's a case about ASIS making allegations that Mr. Don Darrow and Highland were one and the same, and ASIS also was one and the same, entering into a consent judgment and failing to carve out and reserve claims against Mr. Don Darrow. They elected strategically to split claims and move forward, which created a little bit of a minefield, and they failed to navigate it. Now ASIS is arguing that Don Darrow is not in privity. Privity is, or res judicata applies if you're identical or in privity. Again, as Judge Wilson pointed out, an alter ego allegation is an allegation that the parties are so unified, so related, that you disregard the corporate form and they're treated as one under the law. ASIS's allegations are that Don Darrow and Highland are identical.
Well, but the problem you have is that by the time they entered the consent judgment, they were not identical. because Don Darrow is, you know, suing God and everybody else. And at that point, he's objecting to the settlement agreement. I realize that's a question as to where that is in the record. But he's also taking actions inconsistent with Highland Capital. And so it looks to me like, factually, he's not in privity by the time they enter that judgment. He doesn't want to be part of that judgment. Well, so how do we apply res judicata just based on their allegations, boilerplate or otherwise?
Sorry. There were two judgments, right? There was...
there have been a lot of judgments and a lot of rulings and a lot of different litigation in this. That's part of the problem. But it surely doesn't look like he's one and the same with Highland at the time of this one.
Well, there were two consent judgments in the Highland adversary. One in November of 2020, and then one in, I believe, May of 2021. Mr. Don Darrow did object to the first one, but the carved-out entity that he was still alleged to be an alter ego of, that settled in May of 2021, he did not object to. And that's res judicata also. So there were two opportunities, and so he went along with the second one. He did not object to it.
But isn't it true that by the time these judgments are entered, he no longer controlled the Highland entities? He'd been barred from interacting with them, etc.?
I don't know if the barring had happened yet. He was not in control. I think the control ended in October of 20.
So before the judgments.
Before the judgments. But there's still, they're arguing that he can be held, be so closely related in privity for purposes of res judicata, or for purposes of liability, but not for purposes of res judicata. I mean, that just doesn't make sense. I don't think the timing in which it happens, that presumes that there are only three buckets for privity to apply. After Meza, this court in Russell versus Sun America held that privity is much broader than what Meza was. In that case, Russell had sued Sun America, or sued Southmark, for securities fraud. Southmark set up a new company, or Southmark's owners set up a separate company, sold assets to Sun America. Russell settled with Southmark and then sued Sun America for continuing business enterprise. Sun America did not control the Southmark litigation, was not a party to the Southmark litigation. And this court held that that consent judgment, that agreed dismissal against Southmark, was res judicata on the continuing business enterprise claim against Sun America Securities, based solely on the allegations that they had the same employees, they were running the same business, and they were continuing business enterprise, which is very much akin to an alter ego allegation. So they applied the consent judgment to a party under similar circumstances, I would say, where that party did not control the lawsuit.
Counsel, if I understood your answer to Judge Wilson, Don Darrow resigned from all of his positions in October of 2020.
I believe that's right.
So he also resigned in January of 2020, so what is that, 9 months earlier, as the director and officer of Highland Capital Management, LP and GP. So what was he doing between January of 2020 and October of 2020, where he continued to maintain something that needed to be resigned 9 months after the resignation?
Well,
because that's the magic period, right, where this action was, the ACES action was launched.
He was employed. He was an advisor.
So he was getting a salary, but he was not managing?
I don't know if he was getting a salary, but he was not managing. I believe at one point he was a consultant to the board, but he was not managing. There was a three-person board set up by the bankruptcy court by agreement.
I'm sorry, a three-person board of what set up by the bankruptcy court?
Basically, it's, I don't know how to describe it. It was just three directors that were making, you know, running the company.
And he was one of those?
No, he was advising them.
He was advising them, but he was not. Okay.
I don't understand this. I'm just telling you what it was. He was in a role that he was still employed. I do not know about the compensation, but that did end in October.
So he resigned from whatever that advisory role to the triumvirate.
Yes.
And none of this is—I don't see any of this in the briefing.
No.
Is it? But it's in the record.
It's in the bankruptcy record. But yeah. the The resignation happened in October, and I believe that was undisputed. But Mesa in 2008, I believe the U.S. Supreme Court entered Taylor versus Sturgis, and in that case, they recognized there are at least six bases, and one of them is a variety of pre-existing they're unlimited. They don't really put a number on it. A variety of pre-existing substantive legal relationships between the person to be bound and the party. They also include adequate representation and control over the litigation. Judge Godbee found that ACES's pleadings established a pre-existing substantial legal relationship between Highland and Dondero. Now, they don't address that. They just argue the adequate representation and control over litigation test and don't really confront the basis of Godbee's opinion that the allegation of alter ego, the relationship of Dondero with Highland as CEO, the controlling person of Highland being that he is Highland, created a pre-existing substantial legal relationship. It's unaddressed. So I also don't think that based upon Sun America's and Texas Department of Labor, which says that this court has deemed three types of relationships sufficiently close, but the question is whether the relationship is sufficiently close. They don't say that. They're saying these are a matter of law. If you're in these buckets, there is a relationship sufficiently close for privity. However, you do an analysis to determine whether or not the relationship outside of those buckets is still sufficiently close to justify applying privity. And in this case, there were no facts to analyze because of the allegation of alter ego sets up and establishes privity as a matter of law. How can you be so closely related that you are one to not be in privity with yourself?
But what do we do with the fact or the idea that it wasn't true by the time the litigation ended and the judgment assigning liability was entered?
Well, there's no law saying that the privity at the time of the consent judgment, I mean, they're in privity for purposes of the allegations, the transactions that were the subject of the lawsuit that were being sued upon. They're in privity for liability. The fact that one party subsequently settles and Mr. Dondero is no longer in control, I don't think that changes the analysis at all. I don't think it matters when the consent judgment was entered. The consent judgment is a final judgment on the merits for purposes of res judicata. There is not, nobody's adopted, this court has never adopted, and they don't cite any court that has adopted the restatement second judgments, sections 51 and 50. And so that argument is based upon that provision. And what they're asking the court to do is to adopt two sections of the restatement that has never been adopted by this court or any other court that they cite, ignore the allegations and the legal effect of res judicata, ignore that the first, fourth, second, seventh, and tenth have all said allegations of alter ego are sufficient to establish privity. Ignore this court's prior ruling in Russell, where it applied a consent judgment to a non-party on an allegation of effectively alter ego, just to save them from their failure to carve out Dondero in the consent judgments. Had they preserved those claims and carved them out when they knew what they had done, they strategically decided to sue him separately and split the claims. Had they done what needed to be done under Oreck v. Dyson, the res judicata argument wouldn't even be made. They're also asking this court to save them from their own pleadings, their judicial admissions. That's a heavy ask. They could have done it. They could have not gone so heavy and hard in the paint on the Dondero control that he is Highland and Highland is Dondero. They could have carved him out, but they didn't do that. Instead, the court looked at their pleadings under 12C and said, you have admitted privity. These are binding judgments on the merit. It's res judicata. And they don't challenge if you read the two lawsuits, they're virtually identical. The transactions, there are seven of them. In the Highland case, they say Highland did this. Highland made the transactions. made the transfers. Highland did this, and then in Thonderos, they say, Thondero was Highland. Thondero should be liable for Highland's actions. So they're asking you to hold Thondero liable due to the substantially close relationship that they are one, but then not give him the benefit of res judicata because we went through this weird situation in a bankruptcy. But there's no case out there that talks about timing. They admitted that. Also, in Flores versus Bowden, this court held that alter egos are in privity with a prior party, alleged alter egos. And they cited Robinson versus Volkswagen Burke AG, which says adverse parties own allegations of a controlling near alter ego relationship between a parent and a subsidiary was sufficient to establish privity for preclusion. That's 10th Circuit. The court has held alter ego establishes privity, and timing was never part of the analysis. And they have cited no case to support that claim. Let's see our other points. Again, the three narrow categories have been expanded. Like I said, Texas or the U.S. Supreme Court acknowledges at least six. The one that Godby uses is not being challenged. Their objection to the settlement, again, he objected the first one, did not object to the second one. And I don't think that it matters because he's alleged to be the alter ego in the second one, too. Are there any further questions?
Anything else? Thank you, counsel. Ms. Adler, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. All right, so I want to start with the Taylor case because we heard counsel say that in that case, the Supreme Court recognized six categories, one of which was these pre-existing legal relationships. I think that's different. One, because the factual background of Taylor was different. There was no consent judgment. We've already talked about that. But also because the types of relationships that Taylor talked about in that category were things like a successor in interest to property or an assignee and assignor. They were relationships that don't change over time. They necessarily happen once, the property transfers, and then it doesn't happen again. And so I don't think it's inconsistent with Taylor for the court now to say that alter ego is not one of these pre-existing legal relationships, because that one is necessarily, as these facts demonstrate, more fluid. And building on that, I wanted to highlight this court's opinion in Kleiss versus Farley. In that case, the district court had held that a co-working relationship between two employees of the same government agency automatically created privity. And this court reversed and said, no, we may have held in other cases that a similar relationship resulted in privity, but the relationship itself is not an automatic result of privity. We still have to do the analysis. And so I think that also clarifies that post-Taylor, that's still important. And then the second point on the timing with the restatement, counsel stated that we haven't cited, a court that adopted it. We are not asking this court to adopt the restatement. We cite the restatement because I think that it's a really great context for why the timing matters, that the restatement has gone so far as to say a consent judgment can't result in res judicata later, but we're not asking the court to adopt that and make that rule. We are just asking the court to hold that when a case ends in a consent judgment, it's important to look at privity at that time because factual circumstances and cases can change. There are no further questions. All I have.
I don't think so. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. Thank you for your arguments. Well, you.